Welcome to the Citizens for Health radio show on Building Fortunes Radio with your hosts, Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Make sure you check us out by clicking on the Citizens for Health radio show link on buildingfortunesradio.com. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. Citizens for Health provides over 100,000 supporters with consumer news, action alerts, and opportunities to take action. For nearly two decades, Citizens for Health has been a nonprofit pioneer in the natural health freedom movement. The Citizens for Health Education Foundation offers tools to inform the public of health issues and educate and influence policymakers. Jim Turner is here to spread the word about some of the most interesting topics that can affect your world, from the dangers of mislabeled or dangerous products to the questions and concerns of vaccines. You'll want to listen to Jim as he speaks on behalf of Citizens for Health. And now, on to our show with Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Take it away, Peter.
Hello, everyone. Peter Mingles here. We are live on Building Fortunes Radio. That's www.buildingfortunesradio.com. This is our very special segment with Jim Turner. Jim Turner is an attorney in Washington, D.C., been so for a really long time. We met Jim several years ago, like lots of years ago, like half a decade or more ago, when I was doing something with a network marketing organization, found out a little bit about Jim, said I'd love to be able to bring your level of expertise and awareness to the home-based business market and arena, because there's a lot of people that are entrepreneurs and free spirits, and they want to go out there and do a whole bunch of cool things, and they need help, and they need education for sure. So we started this Citizens for Health radio show where Jim gets a chance to share a microphone with me. We can kind of blend some stuff in together with the home-based business platform and the things that he does to help educate our customers, as well as lots of other people in the world as well. You know, there's a lot of people listening live, but if you're unfamiliar with how to listen in live, if you go to buildingfortunesradio.com/live to any internet connected device at this time, which is noon on a Friday, Eastern time, you'll be able to listen into us live. And if you dial the number 347-237-4097, you'll be able to listen in on the phone. So if you dial 347-237-4097, you'll be able to listen in on the phone as long as we're live and doing one of our radio shows. Jim Turner is a gentleman who's got so much great information that we record these and then we put them up on buildingfortunesradio.com/citizens. And you can listen to any one of those radio shows, regardless of how old they are. There's great educational information in there from Jim Turner. And I've learned so much by hosting these shows, and I'll blend some of that into the conversations we're going to have today. But the first thing that I wanted to do is remind everybody, if you go to citizens.org, CITIZENS.ORG, sign up for the newsletter, because there's a lot of things that Jim Turner's organization sends out that comes in action alerts and cool notices, and sometimes even personalize them to the state that you might be in. So if you're going to do anything today and write something down and make sure you get something down on your things to do list, go to citizens.org and make sure you sign up for the newsletter. So we have a lot of information for you today. Some of the stuff is really pertinent to me as well, as Jim kind of prefaced some of the things that he's referencing on our radio show. So, Jim, thanks for being here on the radio show.
Well, thank you very much, Peter. I always enjoy being here and talking with you. And I do want to say one thing. What I try to do is provide information, and the education part, I think people have to kind of work on their own to figure out how to use the information. I mean, everybody's got their own particular assets in terms of figuring out how to talk to whoever they're trying to influence. So I give pointers, but I hope it works as education. But my main point here is to give information.
Excellent.
Today, I mentioned, Peter, when we were talking before the show, that a couple of things. One is that the group Homeopathy, Americans for Homeopathy Choice, group that I've been advising, filed its petition with the FDA last week, and we understood, got a call from the FDA this morning saying it would be published on the FDA website Monday or Tuesday. So that's a very, very important initiative that lays out why the FDA is required by law and should, as a matter of policy, treat homeopathy properly, because it has an important role to play in the well-being of American health. And so it's very important for everybody to kind of that's interested in creating an atmosphere in which our health issues are actually addressed effectively, this is a very important initiative. It can be a major breakthrough, depending on how the FDA responds. We expect them to be very resistant to the arguments. The arguments in the petition are to set up an advisory committee on homeopathy at the FDA, to adopt the guidelines that the homeopathy community and FDA worked out 30 years ago to effect to manage homeopathy. For some reason, unbeknownst, and then we've been able to discover, FDA decided in December of the past year, December 2017, to repeal these guidelines that managed homeopathy quite effectively for 30 years and replace it with one that is completely flawed and will be unable to affect any of the goals either of the FDA or of the people who use homeopathic medicines. It seems almost if it was designed to just basically stamp out homeopathy. But in any case, this petition is what meetings with the FDA suggested might be a way to go forward and change the course of the FDA. We'll find out when they respond. And we have asked if they don't, and we've asked them to suspend that proposed guideline that we consider to be so destructive. And we have asked them if they don't do all of those things, then to hold a public hearing on homeopathy before such time as they issue anything. So that's all pending at the FDA, and we would very much like to have people find that petition. Next week we'll be able to tell you the exact number and location of where to go to comment, and I imagine this will be a significant period of time for comments. In any case, that's a very important initiative, and I think a big, big dialogue is going to be set up about the role of homeopathy in the American healthcare system. So that's important, good to know, and I hope people here get themselves involved in thinking it through.
And we did a radio show with a gal. Her name was Paula Brown. So if you look for buildingfortunesradio.com/citizens and then go search for Paula, P-A-O-L-A, Brown, you'll be able to hear a mom who uses homeopathy, and she wants still the right to be able to use homeopathy at, you know, the way she's been doing it in her home and lots of other people in the same area. And you really have to listen to some of the previous radio shows we've done on it, because, Jim, if there's anything that you can take without, you know, really any negative side effects or potential deaths or anything else like that, almost the safest thing you could probably do is homeopathy. And why they're trying to stamp that out, in my humble opinion, is just I really don't understand. I kind of get it. You know, I can give you some reasons why, but I kind of don't get it. So I don't know if you want to comment to that, or we want to move to our next.
Well, it's
topic.
It's a very interesting situation. I am now reading a book about homeopathy's introduction into federal law by a major homeopath whose name was Copeland, Royal S. Copeland, and he was a U.S. senator from New York, and he was the former public health commissioner of New York. He took that job over in 1918 and designed some unique ways of responding to the flu epidemic, and one of the things that happened is that they had a much less virulent flu epidemic in New York than they did in Philadelphia and Boston. And he designed the program, and a very strong advocate of homeopathy. And his success as the public health commissioner in New York was one of the things that fueled his election to the U.S. Senate. And in the U.S. Senate, he ended up being the sponsor of the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act of 1938, which specifically identifies homeopathic remedies as a key part of what FDA is designed to regulate, a key part of the healthcare system. It's interesting to know that homeopaths were very effective and quite widespread in the United States in 1845, roughly. They started about 1825 and got involved more and more and became a major force in delivering healthcare. It's highly individual, very specific, based on a set of very involved research activities done by doctors in Germany and France, then brought to the U.S. And it's interesting that the Homeopathic Medical Association was organized in 1845, and it is the oldest organized medical association in America. And 2 years later, the American Medical Association was organized with the expressed announced purpose of driving the homeopaths out of business. It was basically organized as a basically as a trade union, and the idea was to force homeopaths to stop being able to work. And they had quite a bit of success in a lot of ways. And the history of that story is something that people in this country should know more about, because it took away access to one of the really potentially strong components of a good healthcare system. And now the FDA is trying to finish that off with this latest guidance. And Paula Brown, who was on your program, founded Americans for Homeopathy Choice, the people petitioning the FDA now, for the express purpose of preventing the FDA from taking it away from, as she puts it, moms who treat their kids with homeopathy. It's a really, really important aspect of the whole healthcare debate that's underway. The main reason that homeopathy has not, the main reason it has languished, in addition to being under the gun constantly, is that if you were to decide to treat the entire American population with homeopathic remedies for a year, it would cost you something in the neighborhood of $10 million or so. It's a very interesting situation, because the inability to create a massive financial underpinnings has pushed homeopathy off to the side. It still is a $3 billion business in the United States today and growing. There's some estimates that say every dollar that is spent on homeopathy takes $100 out of the pharmaceutical companies. So that would make it somewhat of a formidable force economically, and it's continuing to grow. Some cynics suggest that the fact that it's growing and has that impact on the pharmaceutical market is the reason FDA took its action last December. But we don't look at that as far as the petition is concerned. What we're saying is the law says homeopathy exists and is to be treated in accordance with the law, and the FDA has proposed a guideline that says homeopathy should not be treated in accordance with the law, it should be treated differently. And so that's going to be an interesting dialogue at FDA.
It sure will be. And it's just amazing, you know, what you said, you know, everybody in the United States, if you treat them with homeopathy, would be 10 million with an M, as opposed to what we spend right now, which is probably in the billions with the double B's, if you know what I mean. So it's
big
money.
And by the way, one of the huge tragedies is that what Paula is asking for in the petition is the right for her family to use homeopathy, and she is more than happy to use it in conjunction with other forms. So, for example, today homeopathic remedies are used in many hospitals after surgery, because they are very good for controlling pain. And by the way, something that's good for controlling pain is very, very valuable in the opioid crisis that we have. These are avenues that have been completely suppressed by the drug industry. They don't want anything in the market that would make people use something that stops their pain, that is inexpensive and safe, when you could be selling them opioids, which are very expensive and unsafe. So that is an example. Another example is that we have a huge, huge antibiotic crisis going on in the world, and that's basically from the overuse of antibiotics. One of the interesting things about homeopathy is, and this is one of the reasons I think it's so important, I want my antibiotics to work when I have to use them. When my temperature is up to 104 or more, I want my antibiotics to work, and I don't want the whole ecosphere to have been saturated with antibiotic chemicals that actually create a worse situation than they would, than not taking them would. And when I want to take them, I want them to work. I want them to be available. I want them to actually be successful. But the way things are structured right now, everybody is taught to go get an antibiotic for everything that happens, common cold, which they don't actually help for, common cold, or the flu or whatever, dump antibiotics into people. And what it does, that doesn't do much to help those symptoms. And it also simultaneously makes the antibiotics less likely to work when you really need them. These are real issues that are viable in the world that people are discussing. And homeopathy has something to say about how they can be handled. And instead of looking at that as an opportunity, the FDA wants to stamp it out. So that's the kind of thing that we're dealing with, and we need to get the public aware, and they need to understand it, and they need to be drawn into this discussion. It's going to be a very, very important discussion about the future of health in America.
Excellent. Okay, so we're going to switch topics. And this one's going to get a little bit personal on my part. So just to date this call, it's July 27th of 2018. I have a son. His name is Vincent. I have three children. My middle son, Vincent, is going to be moving to Colorado over the next week. His girlfriend, who is going to become his wife, is going to be moving to Colorado as a student doing some research on music therapy, and I wish them luck. However, I've been warned, Jim, we're going to a wedding. They're doing a little teeny wedding on the beach. We do these things over here on the beach when you don't want to spend a ton of money on like this elaborate wedding. They just want a little ceremony. They've been, quote unquote, living together since forever. So I think he's 27 now. So is she. So they've been living together forever. They're going to go get married on a beach. So we're going to be there tomorrow. You know, hopefully it doesn't rain, blah, 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 blah. I'm just building up the little story to say that I have been warned, Jim, I have been warned to not bring up two things at this wedding, because I have a tendency to speak, like I bring up this whole concept of, like you say, inform yourself, you know, education. It's not a bad thing. Give people choices. Well, there are two things that are very volatile. I have been warned in both aspects not to bring up. One is Donald Trump. My future mother-in-law, I have been told, she's a doctor, there's a little clue, she's a doctor, and I have been told that I should, and by the way, there's on the other side of the family, and even most of my side of the family, they're anti-Trumpers. So I have been warned, don't talk about Donald Trump. You're going to get punched. Like physical violence, I've been threatened. My own family and future family. The other one is on vaccines, because the mother-in-law, future mother-in-law, is a doctor. And I guess doctors have certain opinions about vaccines. See, I can't have an opinion on Donald Trump or vaccines. Those are the only two things I mentioned. There's probably more if you know anything about me. But the vaccine thing is such a volatile issue. And I, as a result of this radio show, you said something last time we were on. I regurgitated something that I heard once before about, you know, good vaccines, like the polio vaccine. And you had suggested that, well, maybe you want to do a little bit more research on that sort of stuff so you get a little bit more of an opinion on both sides of the fence. And I'm like, whoa, holy cow, did I misspeak? I was using the regurgitated tones of people that were pro-vaccine, that the polio vaccine had done such a wonderful thing. So I'm like, okay, well, I'll give them one, you know, so I'll give them one. And then after doing some research, I really questioned that. But, Jim, the only reason why I did what I did right now is, number one, to date the call from my son. But number two, vaccines are as polarizing, at least in my family, as Donald Trump. So I've been kind of warned. So next week, if I come back with a broken nose and I'm sniffling a little bit as a result of this, I couldn't stop myself. But you're going to talk a little bit about vaccines next. So don't worry about Donald Trump. We have a whole radio show on that one. But tell us a little bit about the volatile situation with vaccines. Why am I going to get beaten up?
Well, it's a mess. I mean, vaccine regulation is a mess, and from top to bottom, and being completely misrepresented to the public. I know that you're all sitting out there, whatever side you are on the vaccine issue, wondering how I can possibly say that. And I will give you a piece of information that happened last week that I think really should arrest everybody's attention. And that is that the Vaccine Compensation Court awarded an award to a baby who was basically done for life, a healthy baby under about a year, got an MMR vaccine, and was injured in a way that the government itself says deserves compensation. And the compensation for that one baby was $101 million. One baby. Now, you can rest happily to know that it doesn't come out of taxpayers' money, because every time you get vaccinated, 75 cents goes into a fund, which is the companies say it's their money that goes into that fund. Actually, it's your money. That's one of the hard things to understand. It's your money. All the money that the corporations play with is your money. It goes into the fund, and there is now a little over $4 billion in that fund. Actually, there's more than that. They've actually paid out a little over $4 billion to people who have been maimed, like this little baby. $4 billion since 1989, $4 billion, it's about 4,500 families that have had a child killed or completely devastated. This child will live for many, many years, unable to participate in life for all intents and purposes. And that is from a product which the government around the country is making mandatory. You must have this vaccine as a child. And understand that the government's moving in the direction of creating mandatory vaccines for adults as well. There are already mandatory vaccines for nurses. Moving toward making mandatory vaccines for teachers. And they're going to move in the direction of making mandatory vaccines for travelers. You won't be able to get a passport unless you prove that you've been vaccinated. These things are just an absolute violation of the rights of the individual. The vaccine rules that existed prior to this push to make them all mandatory for everyone were rules that were designed to be used in an emergency. The emergency would be that this was all organized for. It was a smallpox epidemic, and smallpox was very, very dangerous. Established order now believes it's been eradicated. It's interesting to know that in eradicating the smallpox disease, the doctors that did that did not use mass vaccination to do it. What they did was targeted vaccination. It's like I was saying earlier about homeopathy. You want to target your tools. You want to focus them on what they're useful for. You do not want to overuse them. You don't want to undermine the health of people by flooding the world with things that are, in fact, able to create problems as well as they can be helpful. So the smallpox team that got rid of smallpox did it by using what they would use targeted vaccination to do it. Now, in the world that we live in, the people who want to make sure that everyone's vaccinated make arguments that just are garbled. They're just garbled arguments. For example, they say all vaccines are clearly safe. We know that they're not safe for everyone, but they say that they're clearly safe. And the problem with that is that when they discuss the actual thing that's injected into your arm, they discuss the actual disease organism that's involved. They do not discuss, in their assertions of safety, all the things that come along with that, which include adjuvants, aluminum, mercury. They're made in human cells. These are things, and it's not clear that some are made in monkey cells. It's not clear that either of those cells don't convey something that is dangerous. Monkey cells may convey cancer. We don't know. The main cell that's the main item that's been shown that a virus causes cancer is a monkey cell. It's a monkey virus. And we grew all that polio that you talked about earlier. We grew the Sabin part of it in those monkey cells that had caused cancer in animals. We don't know whether that's been transmitted to people or not. And the point here is not that it has. The point here is that it has to be calculated as a potential risk. Well, it is. It's not a potential risk. It's a risk. And what the potential of that risk is has been uncalculated. The same thing is true for on the human side, the human cell side. Dr. Salk maintained that that had the potential of transmitting irrevocably reproducing cells, which could turn into cancer. So you got a debate going on between Salk and Sabin inside the vaccine community, each one saying the other has the potential of causing cancer, and fighting, and then the issue is resolved essentially politically. Whoever's got the political power, their particular vaccine becomes the one that's used. That's one of the tough things to understand about this culture. Battles go on behind the scenes politically. People fight this way and that way, and then a decision comes out, and everybody locksteps behind the decision and pretends that it's all clear and unequivocal. So back to the vaccines in general, when they say a vaccine is safe, you very rarely see them say that it's clear that all vaccines, including all of the adjuvants, heavy metals, cell lines, and so forth that are in them or associated with them are safe. We'll say that if they're attacked, they'll say, well, we don't have any evidence that they're harmful. That's not true. There's a lot of evidence. What they're saying is they don't believe that evidence is conclusive. Big difference between saying we've proved something to be safe and saying we have not proved it to be harmful. They do not make that distinction in these debates. So understand there is a huge, huge, huge dynamic underway around vaccines, and that's going to become, you know, another one of those big issues that's out there in the public. So $101 million to one child last week by the government.
Right. So
that's not a lawsuit. That's not a jury. That's a pure government fact finder sitting down and saying, I look at this thing and I'm telling you, $101 million for this kid.
That's heartbreaking. Heartbreaking. Because, you know, the $101 million doesn't fix the child or the parents.
Nothing. Nothing. And one of the things that got me, I looked at this issue first starting in 1970, and there were people inside the vaccine world, and there were people who I thought were somewhat helpful on our side of the issue. But they would talk about the children that were harmed, and there were, you know, there's always been children harmed. They talked about them as wastage. And I'm telling you, that was chilling up and down my spine when I heard them talk that way. And these are regulators and researchers. And I'm telling you, when you look underneath the lid on that can, it's not very pretty at all.
The ironic part of that $101 million is it's not going to be spent on the kid playing a sport or maybe going to a college or anything else like that. It's just going to be recycled into the healthcare industry, most likely. Now, who knows what his parents are going to do with $101 million. Maybe they'll buy cars and boats and other things like
that. No, that's not the way it works. The $1 million went to them in cash, and the $100 million goes into a trust fund to maintain the baby's life and health. So that trust fund is there, and it sits there, and then the baby lives, you know, is given the best life they can. I mean,
so
the thing that's so tragic about the situation is that the abstract rulemakers, the legislators, the regulators, and so forth, who sit here in Washington or in hospitals or the legislators or whatever around the country who do these abstract decisions are well-intended. I mean, they think, okay, we're going to do good stuff. And then they're fed a whole bunch of partial information that causes them to believe that giving 70 or so vaccinations to every child before they're the age of before they're through the seventh grade will be a good thing for the child and a good thing for the society. And when you start pointing out all of the flaws in that argument, then they start calculating, well, the number of kids that are killed and maimed by these vaccines is so small that it doesn't really outweigh the fact that all this other stuff they think is positive is going on. But they do that without actually doing the weighing. And it's very, very, in my mind, it's very immoral and unethical to argue that the deaths, the known deaths, you know that these vaccines are going to kill a number of children. They don't think it's an important number. I think it's a crucial number. And they know it, and they say the number that it's going to, they're going to kill is not significant enough to outweigh the benefits to all the rest of them. The fact of the matter is that you could get all the benefits of the vaccines that exist by handling properly, using them the way that science says they should be used, providing the proper information, doing the proper screening, and you might be able to get down to the point where there are no deaths. Maybe there will be one or two. But the way it is right now, they're just automatically assuming that the number of deaths that they know are going to occur is outweighs the whole situation, outweighs all of the, you know, the number of deaths are outweighed by all of the good stuff. The most important thing from my point of view is that the parents need to be involved in the decision so that they can look at the data and say, I don't want this vaccine, but I do want that one. I don't want it on this particular schedule. I would rather do it on the schedule that my pediatrician is recommending. Pediatricians in many instances recommend a different schedule than the federal government, but the law in each state is tied to the federal government's schedule. They may want to say that I don't want to take the measles, mumps, and rubella at the same time. I want to take them separately. All of these things are decisions that individual parents should be allowed to make, can be allowed to make, and it works better for the healthcare system if they're allowed to make them, and it doesn't undermine anything that is alleged to be a value of the vaccines for that to happen, and yet they go forward constantly pushing. And here's an example. If you have circulating measles antibody and you take a measles shot, you have a small chance of getting an entirely fatal disease, subacute sclerosing panencephalitis. That is something that can occur because you have circulating measles antibody, which you might have gotten naturally. And all it would take is to screen everybody that gets the measles shot to see if they have them or not and then get and keep them out. There's no program to do that. There's no program to do that, and every effort that's been made to get such a program has been thwarted. It's administratively and economically costly to do, and so it's not done, because not only do they say the vaccine is values of the vaccine outweigh the deaths, but also the costs of being sure that somebody isn't going to die from the vaccine also are legitimate, because it would be too costly to screen out the very small number of people who might be harmed. That small number of people is a legitimate price in their mind to be able to do whatever it is they think they're doing when they give everybody, say, the measles shot. So this is a tough, big social battle that's going to wage, and it's getting harder and harder across the country.
And the challenge that I have, in addition to all the other information, is they don't have a choice. I don't have a choice, and that's the challenge. And then the penalty is severalfold. In the state of California, right, if I don't have my kids vaccinated according to the schedule, they can't go to school. If I'm a school teacher and I decide that I don't want to take a flu shot, I might not be able to teach. Or if I'm a nurse or work in a nursing home, I might not be able to do something. Or if, like you had mentioned a little bit earlier, if I want to be able to fly to France, I might not be able to get my passport. Or if I don't want something because I don't want something, I might even, who knows what it might be after that. So it's a crazy thing, Jim, and like I kind of had a little bit of fun with the topic when I first got started relative to my personal situation that's going to happen to me on Saturday, where I'm not allowed to talk about Donald Trump or vaccines. Based on the way you just phrased that argument, you'd say, well, okay, so take Donald Trump off the table, because there's plenty to talk about there. But how about this vaccine thing? Why can't we discuss any of these things? And even if you are a doctor, or even if you believe in doctors, why can't these be topics of conversation? And that's the part that I have such a challenge with. And that's the reason why we do this radio show, so you can actually...
Well, I think it's going to get easier as time goes on. If you want to really say something and then duck, ask her about take with you a copy of a story about the $101 million award by the government, and just say to the doctor, "Gee, I'm concerned about this. What do you think?" Right. Is this a miscarriage of justice? What's going on? What should we do?
What should we do?
And then duck.
Oh, big time.
Because the people, the doctor, for example, just by saying doctor, pretty much they are so wedded to the belief that they've been trained in that it really frightens them and undermines their confidence and security when these things start crumbling around them. And so when you say that there was a $101 million award to a child, what do you think about that? They're going to, first of all, they won't, most likely won't know about it because it's not publicized. But they will not know about it, or they will already have heard about it and already built up their defense mechanism, and they'll make all kinds of arguments. And you just listen. Don't even argue with them. Just listen. Say, oh, I'm glad to hear what you're saying, and so over. Then you'll hear things like, well, you know, it's very rare. It's not definite. Just because they paid the money doesn't mean the vaccine caused the problem. This is a very unique child. She had a lot of other problems. They'll have all kinds of arguments to make. But in the final analysis, a very precise system designed to give the least amount that it possibly can to anybody who comes in with a claim actually still found this child deserved $101 million. And that's not by lawyers going in and arguing in a case before a jury. This is by presenting evidence. The lawyers help the family do it. The lawyers have a capped fee for this, by the way. They don't get a percentage of that amount. It's a completely different kind of system. And it's a system designed to screen out anything except the most specifically legitimate claim. And here comes one, $101 million. People have to really start taking a look at what's going on here. This is just one of a bazillion things that the government does every day that nobody knows about. By the way, those billions of things going on that the government doesn't know anything about are part of the reasons lots of people are hoping Trump will help. And we'll all know in the long run whether he does or not.
There we go. So we're going to respect Jim's time. I'm just going to open up the can of worms one more time to show just a little bit of a conflict. Right now as we speak, there is a trial by high-paid lawyers and big-paid companies of Monsanto, which is changing its name to Bayer as they're being absorbed by the German company, defending or not defending glyphosate, if that's the way you pronounce it, which is the active ingredient in Roundup. And there's cases literally right now that are going on as we speak. And in that instance, an individual who has cancer can sue a company that makes a product that he believes caused his cancer. That's the judicial system. I might be using the wrong terms, Jim, but that's the way it usually works. The vaccine industry is the only one that I know where a company cannot be sued because they make a defective product.
That's right. And what's interesting, other companies are lining up to get that same kind of exclusion. The oil industry has now got a bill pending before Congress in which they get the same kind of exclusion. It's fascinating. It's just fascinating. It's, you know, all through history, people who grasp and grasp and grasp for money and power end up getting bloated and gloated and so forth and then collapse and fall over. And the big issue for America is how much of America is going to go with them when they collapse. We came very close in 2008, and we're inching up to it again. And, you know, how much of it are we going to be able to hold on to after this, after the next collapse? And that's, I think, what's up on the battlefronts, and Monsanto's. I mean, we ought to call it Bayer Monsanto, Monsanto Bayer, and just make everybody understand that's the same thing. Bayer's trying to, they bought Monsanto, and they're trying to get out from under the bad name that Monsanto is by changing the name to Bayer. But Bayer's not any much of a better actor than Monsanto. So don't be fooled.
There we go. Okay, so thanks, Jim,
for
being here.
We can talk about
really
that Monsanto case next week if you'd like.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, as it starts to percolate through, we'll definitely talk about it. So thanks, everybody, for listening in. You heard from Jim Turner. He's an attorney over in Washington, D.C. Citizens for Health. Citizens for Health. If you go to citizens.org, make sure you sign up for the newsletter, citizens.org, and then check out the previous radio shows. As I promised a little bit earlier, there's a lot of great information here that Jim provides. And the stuff that he talked about on this one is priceless. So, Jim, thanks for being here. And thanks for
thanks
a little
a
bit
lot,
of the ambition.
Peter. I look forward to our
Thank you.
Next round.
Yep, we'll see you next time.
Thanks,
everyone.
Thanks, bye.
You've been listening to the Citizens for Health radio show, brought to you by Citizens for Health on buildingfortunesradio.com with Jim Turner and Peter Mingles. Thanks for listening. For nearly two decades, Citizens for Health has been a nonprofit pioneer in the natural health freedom movement. Go to www.citizens.org to learn more and always listen in to Building Fortunes Radio, where our special host, Jim Turner, shares crucial information about many of the most important issues that affect your world. Citizens for Health provides over 100,000 supporters with consumer news, action alerts, and opportunities to take action. So listen in, get involved, and help spread the word. Be sure to check out the buildingfortunesradio.com website to hear more Citizens for Health segments with Jim Turner and Peter Mingle, and read about what's new on www.citizens.org. It's been our privilege to have you listen in. Jim Turner, Peter, and I want to say thanks for listening and ask you to go spread the word. Tell a friend, join our newsletter, and go make a difference in your world.